The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome back to the second week of this Intro to Meditation course. And for those of you who might be coming for the first time, I think you'll catch up with some of it. What I didn't say last time is that these talks are recorded, and they've been recorded previous intro courses as well. And so you can, if you miss a class or you want to review it somehow, on our website there's a link to what's called Audio Dharma, and there you'll find these intro classes and you can listen. So if you missed last week, you can get last week's there. So people are still coming in, and it's nice. Maybe some of you have some questions based on last week, or some questions or comments about your own meditation practice at home if you did it. So maybe we can start more informally while waiting for people to come. And so, yes, and so if you could use the mic, please, that would be helpful. And the mic is... Can you pass it forward there? And the green button needs to be... The green light needs to be on at the middle.
Mm-hmm. So I've been meditating for a while. This is very helpful for guidance and staying on track. But lately my dreams have been wild.
Since you started meditating more?
More regularly.
Great.
Anybody else? Anybody?
Yeah. So some people who start meditating regularly, it's even more so when we do meditation retreats and people meditate quite a bit, there's one of three things that can happen with their dreams. Sometimes dreams become much more vivid. And even people who normally don't remember their dreams start remembering the dreams in meditation, at night. Sometimes the opposite happens, that people who even are used to dreaming and knowing their dreams find that they're not aware of dreaming anymore when they start meditating. And then there's the people who nothing changes, same as the three options. So you're definitely normal. You're right in that one of those normal categories. And I wouldn't be so concerned. I could try to offer a hypothesis why this works this way. But it would just be a guess, right? Why the inner life is quite amazing. One of the things we learn when we do this mindfulness practice if we learn to have this kind of special kind of heightened attention to what's going on, whatever unfolds in the inner life is trustable. So for you, I would trust it, what's happening, and just take it as a sign that for you that something's being processed. Someone else? Yes, please. And maybe pass the mic. It's coming towards you from the front. I don't think it's on. The green light in the middle?
I found it humorous. You had made a comment to trust the timer.
Yes.
So when I set my timer, because in the past I hadn't really set the timer, I would just, allow myself to guess and estimate and always be looking. So I had to laugh quite a few times because I wasn't trusting the timer. But then I had a nice surrender to knowing I didn't have to worry. So it was really a nice surrender to not worry. Mm-hmm. And so much through the day is worry. So I really appreciate that.
So trusting a timer helped you not to worry about the time and all. Great,
yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful lesson. It's a lesson that if you do this practice, you'll learn applies in many, many areas of your life. There's an art to learning how to be present for your life in a full way, and then trusting and listening deeply and trusting what comes and working with what comes. And it's a great antidote to anxiety. And it's amazing what the kind of information, the kind of sensitivity, the kind of intuition that comes as we learn to be present and here and how trustable this whole process can be that doesn't require your vigilance or your constant manipulation or figuring or doing. Some of that is necessary, but... Anyone else? So then I have questions for you. And that is, those of you who did some meditation this last week, how many of you found it challenging? I guess that's normal. How many found it in some way or other rewarding or satisfying? That's also normal. And how many of you raised your hands for both times? That's impressive. It's both challenging and rewarding. It's nice. And what are some of the common challenges that you had with the practice? Speak up. You don't have to just sleepiness. Yourself. What?
Sitting still.
Sitting still. Getting comfortable sitting still. Uh huh.
Fidgeting.
Fidgeting.
Towards the end of the week, I'm itching all the time. It's like my body didn't want to do it.
Fidgeting, your body didn't want to do it, itching all the time, yeah. Yes?
Boredom.
Thinking. Uh-huh.
Waiting.
Waiting for the the timer to go. Waiting for the timer. Waiting meditation. Yeah. Uncomfortable breathing, yes. And that's something that often will happen, will come and go. Even after 40 years, there are times I sit down and I have a little bit of discomfort with breathing, a little held, a little tight. And it has a lot to do with what's going on in my daily life. If I'm concerned about something, preoccupied, worried maybe, it kind of all gets expressed in my breathing. And it's usually when you experience it and know it like that, the encouragement is you take it as a good sign. It's actually quite healthy to know that you're having an uncomfortable breath. And then the art of it is just to know it and be present. And over time, it'll work itself out. And it'll work itself out quicker than if you try to make it better. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Great. Someone else? No one? Yes?
I had an interesting experience with that sitting and thinking my legs weren't in my legs,
uh-huh.
Like almost to where I'm lifting them.
Yes.
So yeah. That was interesting.
This is one of the great benefits of being more mindful, is starting to recognize all the places where we have tension in our body. And that ability to recognize tension gets more and more subtle and more and more sensitive. And it's a great help to living a relaxed or comfortable, peaceful life, not to be holding tension. Meditation helps release tension. Mindfulness helps us to be sensitive to when it begins. Good. Yes, behind you, yes.
I had trouble sitting in the same exact position for a very long
time. Yeah.
I had some pain.
Uh-huh.
And then the pain was distracting me. So I decided it's probably better to change position and be quiet.
Yes. Yeah, that's fine. There's no requirement to sit with pain or discomfort. Unless, there's no requirement for it, but sometimes there's benefit with sitting with a little bit. And I'll talk a little bit about that today, but only if you if a person feels confident, and feel, oh, this is interesting, this would be useful to sit with this discomfort, then and you're not going to hurt yourself, then, you know, if you have the, you know, desire to do it, then please. And I've benefited a lot from sitting with physical discomfort, but not to the point of hurting myself. You can always move. And some of the things I'll teach about today will address this topic. So.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not on out there. Oh, you know, it probably was turned off yesterday. So if you know where the knob is there? I know it's in the corner by the Zafus, all the way by the window. Hillary's going to come and do it. It's on the black mark. So it's on the black mark. The line is there. Sometimes I sit here waiting silently to see if the speaker starts working. But until I realize I have to speak in order for... No, it's not working? Yeah, so in which case, I'd encourage you, there's lots of seats in here, so why don't you just come in here and sit, if you don't mind. Or you can use the hearing assistant devices, they'll work out there. So there definitely can be challenges that we feel, experience in meditation. But I think it's useful to think of meditation as a very different activity than maybe anything else that we do. Especially if you're a person who tends to measure or judge activities from the point of view of success and failure. You know, so you're trying to do something and are you successful or you're not successful? And if you're not successful, you're a failure, and you know, it's, then you add all kinds of other conclusions and the fact that you're a failure. But meditation is a very different thing where it doesn't really make sense to look at it from the point of view of success and failure. Or it's just what your life is, and we're meeting it, we're being present for it, we're learning what it is, and if we can't be successful with staying on the breath, for example, that's completely okay. The meditation can still be very successful, or you know, not in that category, because it's not about doing it well, doing it poorly. It's about the slow process of learning to be present for your life as it is. And as you learn to be present, all kinds of benefits will occur. Some of it is that you'll start seeing more clearly what's actually going on in your life. And that heightened clarity and understanding is invaluable. You might also start noticing places of possibilities of greater ease or peace, possibilities of not clinging or reacting to what's going on in your experience. You'll start finding out that there's a natural process that goes on when you sit and are quiet of healing, of coming to wholeness, of settling, relaxing, of a variety of things that begin happening. And it's not you doing it, but rather there's this process, natural process that the whole psychophysical system engages in, that we make space to allow it to happen. The analogy I like to use is that of, you know, if you're in your kitchen and you cut your hand chopping a vegetable or something, and you have a little cut, you have your role in the healing. Your role is to maybe clean it and put a bandage on it. But the actual healing process of a cut is an amazingly complex physiological event. The amount of hormones and immune system activities and you know, all the different things that have to be kind of channeled together, probably you're not smart enough to figure it out on your own. But your body knows how to heal the cut, provided that the conditions are there for it to heal, to keep it clean and keep it covered or something. So the same thing, our psychophysical system knows how to heal from tension, it knows how to heal from a lot of psychological impacts that we have, the feelings we have, emotional challenges we have. And that many people's tendency is to try to be right in there, solving it and fixing it and reacting to it and trying to understand it and kind of working it. But a remarkable amount of stuff can happen if we just kind of keep it clean, leave it alone. And one of the ways we do that is not to do much, but just be present. Just recognize what's happening, be with what's happening, offer our kind presence to it, and then let the natural system unfold and show itself and evolve on its own. It's one of the things that has been, you know, amazingly beneficial in my own life, to get a sense of my role of getting out of the way of my life, getting out of the way of this whole inner process and let it unfold by itself. So the idea of success and failure, you know, that I'm in charge, it's up to me to do this change, you know, I'm supposed to do it, I'm supposed to be successful here, is just a setup for kind of just more complication that's needed. One of the analogies that's used for meditation practice is that of a muddy pond. And so there's a pond of clear water, and the cattle run through it, and you know, it's just all the mud is churned up. And you liked it when it was clear, the pond, and it was really nice. And now the cows have churned up the pond, and it's all muddy, and it's, you know, it's not so nice, and you don't want to go in it. And so you want the mud to settle quickly. So you go get a big paddle, and you try to push down the mud and move it around, and you know, and the more you stir it up with your paddle, trying to get it to go away, the mud, the more you stir it up and keep it going, right? And what you have to do is you have to stop stirring the muddy water and leave it alone, and then it'll settle by itself. And eventually it becomes clear. The mind is that way as well. It can get muddy, it can get agitated with all kinds of thoughts and concerns and ideas and reactions to the world. And if we try to settle the agitated mind with more agitation, if we try to settle, a challenging mind with judging it, with being critical of it, with trying to think your way out of it, you're just adding more, and you're stirring it up and keep it stirring. So it's a very different activity, meditation, where we kind of create the conditions for it to just let it settle by itself, get out of the way. And getting out of the way doesn't mean we ignore what's happening. It means we have a heightened awareness to what's happening. Oh, this is what's happening, and we leave it alone. Just let it be. It's okay. And so one of the great mantras that came out of America, I don't know if you know this, you know, mantras, they associate with India, but it's one of the greatest mantric contributions that America has made to the civilization. It arose in Boston in the 1820s. We don't know exactly where it began and who was the source of it, but it's been used many, many times to settle people, to quiet people down, to help people be more peaceful, to kind of manage with what's going on. It's the great mantra, it's okay. It's okay. And so the idea that whatever's going on, it's okay. It's okay. Body's painful, you're bored, you're restless, you're fidgeting, you're having dreams. It's okay. As opposed to putting the paddle in the water and stirring it up some more. And that allows for this inner process that needs to unfold more. And you get to know yourself more. So hopefully that was clear. So I want to tell another story about this process of kind of learning to leave things alone and just be present and see things more clearly for what they are. And then we'll do a meditation. And this is something that happened to me many years ago when I was a relatively new teacher, and I was teaching a retreat with more senior teachers. And it was there was a group of teachers co-teaching. And there was a set of male teachers there who happened to be really into the, watching the 49ers. This is back when they were doing really well, a long time ago. And it happened to be an important game during the retreat. And so all the meditators, all the retreatants were off in a little room, you know, meditating in the meditation hall. And during a free time, the teachers were watching football. You know, we didn't tell them. And but I didn't know much about football, you know, but I went along with my buddies to, you know, and to watch. And so then at some point there was a commercial, and one of the teachers had a remote, and they turned the sound off. And then we talked, you know, like about stuff. And then the game started again. And the person who had the remote did not unmute it. And since he was a mindfulness teacher, and we were silent, you know, I'm sure he recognized the fact that there was no sound. So I did what I've learned through this practice is a very useful strategy. Rather than nudging him or saying, hey, you know, what's wrong with you? Or, you know, being patient for the sound. I got interested. So one of the strategies here, when with this practice. It's just, okay, something's happened. Let's get interested in this. What is this like? What's going on? So I got interested in the fact that there was no sound. So I watched the football game, and I knew just enough football back then to kind of have a general sense of how the game goes. These big guys, they line up, face each other, and then the ball goes and they all fall down. And then sometimes they line up, and sometimes the ball gets thrown, and sometimes someone catches it, and there's these lines in the field, and you know he wants to go across those lines, and you can watch them going across, and you feel, oh, that's good for him. And, you know, it's nice. But oh, it's too bad. Someone came from the side and tackled, and that was I guess that play's over. So it was very matter-of-fact. Without the sound, you know, it was like, you can kind of follow. It was kind of interesting, kind of, you know. But then my friend unmuted the TV. And then what was really interesting then was the difference. Because then what we had is the commentator who was talking us through the plays. And I think the job description of a commentator is to get us all excited and into the game. And in fact, I could feel that, the enthusiasm of this commentator. It wasn't just, oh, look at that, he's going across the field, it's nice, and he's heading in the right direction, he might make it. It was like I could feel myself almost wanting to stand up and, you know, like, you know, he's at the, I don't know, the 50, he's at the 40, you know, suddenly it's all kind of like, you know, I'm riled up, right? They're like, wow, this is exciting. And in the past, when I hadn't seen that the experience of watching the football game was entangled with a commentary. And the game is just a game, but the commentator added a whole bunch of mood, excitement to it. Nothing wrong with that, but they're two different things. You're watching a movie, there's a very idyllic, beautiful trail path in the forest. It looks pastoral and nice and sweet and friendly and just like a nice place to go for a stroll. But then there's the ominous music and our hair stands on edge. Oh no, we know what's going to happen now. And, you know, it's just a picture. It's just a forest, right? It's a nice, but the music affects our mood big time. So we have a commentator in our minds that provides commentary, judgment, ideas. We have, we create our own mood music in there. And so because of that commentator and that mood music, we don't see things clearly for what they are themselves. It gets entangled with the commentary. And one of the things we're trying to do with mindfulness practice is to decouple the commentary from the experience that we're having. It can be okay to have commentary, but we don't want to confuse the commentary with the experience. So if I'm sitting here having an uncomfortable breath, it's just an uncomfortable breath. Just could be very simple, just an uncomfortable breath. What cannot be simple is my commentary. I've spent decades living in California within a short distance of Esalen, where we know that we're supposed to have a deep, long, satisfying California breath if you're a spiritual person. And I'm not that having one of those spiritual breaths. I'm probably not entering into a samadhi yet. And my breath is all kind of tied up. I'm kind of a spiritual failure here in California. And this is really a drag. And here I am again being a failure. And I seem to fail everything I do. And I choose the wrong roommates. And then I bought the wrong car and it died right away. And I'm just like, you know, a real loser. And you know, probably I should, do some therapy about this. But therapy is so expensive, and that's because my parents didn't raise me right to get, to get through at school, and they didn't believe in me, and it's hopeless for me. But I heard that meditation is really helpful, and it's also free. You can just meditate. And maybe I should try it. Oh, wait a minute, I am meditating. So we can make this comment. We started off with just an uncomfortable breath, a very simple thing. And we can charge off into commentary, into stories and ideas, and one thing associates to another, and it builds and builds, and we lose touch with what's happening here. Or if we stay in touch with the breath, it can be so heavy if we have the idea that I'm a failure. Or you do have that deep, wonderful breath. It's so satisfying. I think I've got it made. I'm like the best breather, in Redwood City. It's certainly, I'm really spiritual. I wonder if they give out badges at IMC. And it's all commentary, right? And so what we're trying to do in mindfulness is to learn to separate these two out, and if possible, just put the commentary aside or let it go in favor of just seeing the experience for what it is, this moment. Commentary is just agitating the waters. Just seeing for what it is. If you can't let go of the commentary, it's fine. But you really want to separate them out. So an uncomfortable breath is just an uncomfortable breath. Very simple. Or a deep, satisfying breath is just a deep, satisfying breath. Nothing more, nothing less. And as we learn to do this, life can get so much more simpler. And especially for meditation, it's kind of like creating the conditions for meditation to unfold, the natural process to deepen and happen, if we can make that distinction. So we're going to, today the topic is going to be mindfulness of the body. And I'll talk more about that after we do the meditation. But I would like to introduce this topic through a guided meditation. And as we do it, keep in mind this teaching about the commentary. And see if you can just put that aside, or at least notice when you're living in the commentary, looking at the experience through the commentary, and just kind of go bypass it in favor of really experiencing what we're doing here directly in your body. So we're going to do three phases of this meditation. The first is a little exercise about a way of bringing attention to your body through a simple exercise of bringing attention to your hand. So I'll explain in the meditation how we do that. And then I'll direct it a few other places. And then I'll direct it to the breathing like we did last week. And we'll spend a little bit of time here just staying with the breathing, meditating on the breath, settling in with it. And then the third phase of this meditation, I will direct your attention once again to some other parts of your body. So you'll see, you don't have to remember that, but it'll become clear. So to start a meditation session, it's useful to sit up straight, but in a way that's comfortable for you. Especially in the evening when some of you might be tired, it might be helpful to have a little bit more alert spine than you normally would. And then gently close your eyes. And as a preliminary, it's useful to take a few long, slow, deep breaths, filling your chest with air as you breathe in, and relaxing as you breathe out. And then letting your breath, your breathing, return to normal. And take a few moments to scan through your body to see if there's any obvious places of holding tension that you can relax. Maybe softening the belly, letting the stomach hang forward, down. Softening the shoulders. Even if shoulders can't relax, maybe they can be softened a little bit. And relaxing around the face, the eyes. Letting the eyes rest in their sockets. And then And then to begin this exercise you're asked to, in a deliberate and calm way, calmly and deliberately, bring your attention into your right hand. In a calm, deliberate way, feel the sensations that are in your hand. The palm of the hand. The back of the right hand. The fingers. And noticing what kind of sensations are there. Is there, maybe there's tingling or vibration, pulsing, some warmth or coolness. Feelings of weight or of lightness. If your right hand is touching something, there's a feeling of contact, pressure, weight, pushing, smoothness, roughness. And if you bring your attention to your right hand and hold the attention exploring what's going on there, you probably become aware of more sensations in your hand. Becomes maybe a little bit alive with sensations than if you had not brought your attention there. So then in a calm, deliberate way, move your attention from the right hand to your left hand. And the same thing there. Enter the right hand and feel the sensations that are there. And seeing if you can distinguish the simple sensations of your left hand from any commentary you have, any thoughts, ideas you have about it, any reactions to what's happening, so that the simple sensations of your left hand stand out in awareness. And now, I'm going to suggest you bring your awareness to another place in your body. And do so calmly and deliberately. And see if you can become aware of this part of your body without reacting, without judgments, without commentary so much. But feel it in a relaxed, open way, the way you felt your hands. So the part of your body to bring your attention to is the place in your body where you feel right now the strongest sensation. Wherever is the strongest sensation of your body, and if there's several that are equally strong, just choose one. And bring your awareness into that part of your body where that strong sensation is. And just take, be interested, just feel it. Open, soft awareness. Doesn't make it a problem. That's commentary. Curious, what's this like? What are the sensations in that part of your body? And now, move your attention calmly and deliberately to that part of your body where you most clearly experience breathing. The movements of the chest or of the belly. The sensation of air going in and out through your nostrils or maybe even back down your throat. In that part of your body where you experience breathing, bring your attention there in the same way that you brought your attention to the hand. And feel the sensations that are there, both those connected to breathing and other sensations in that part of your body. And see if you can feel the fullness of that part of your body. Really feel the experience. Separating out commentary so you can just feel. As you feel the experience of the body breathing, notice how the experience of breathing in is experienced differently than the body breathing out. This exercise, it doesn't matter if breathing is comfortable or uncomfortable. It only matters that you are sensing, feeling that part of your body and the sensations that are there, getting to know them more, allowing them, being open to them in a way that if there's a lot of commentary, we're not so open, receptive. letting go of your thoughts so you can be with the breathing more fully. Especially as you exhale, to remember to let go of your thoughts or let them recede in the background so you're not so focused on thinking. You're more focused on physically feeling or sensing the body breathing. Now, shifting your attention one more time, calmly and deliberately, bring your attention to, again, the strongest sensation in your body. And see if you can be aware of that strong sensation. Well, it doesn't have to be that strong, but be aware of this sensation in a very open way. Allowing it to be there just for a short while here. And while you're allowing it to be there, be interested to know it more fully. To let yourself experience the sensations that are right there as if it's okay, if there's lots of space around it. As if it's allowed to just float and be, and being careful with any commentary you have, letting that be put aside, so you just very simply allow yourself to feel what's there, recognize what's there. If you find it a little bit challenging to be with a sensation, you can use the mantra, "It's okay." And then for the last minute here, come back to your breathing and ride the rhythm of your breath. Just hang in there, breathing in, breathing out, like waves on an ocean coming and going. Just ride your breathing. And then to end this meditation, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Feel your body. Feel the chair, cushion, the floor. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So one of the primary ways that meditation is practiced is to have the central focus be breathing. And sometimes it's called the home or the home base. Stay, come home to the breath, be at home with the breathing. In some forms of meditation, that's all you would do, just meditate with the breath. You have trouble hearing out there? Yeah, you know, that speaker out there is not working, so you have to either come closer in or using a hearing assistant device out there. So Kate is giving you, if you want to wear one of those, you'll hear. So a lot of meditation can be just focused just breathing. It's all you do. What we're aiming to do with mindfulness is to eventually learn how to bring this kind of heightened or clear, open awareness to all aspects of our lived life, whatever's happening in the present moment. And that includes everything. So certainly includes the body, includes our emotions, includes our thinking and our cognitive life, includes the world around us and people and events and things. But to learn to pay attention, not in the usual way, which might be with a lot of commentary, reactions, desires, all kinds of things going on, but to learn how to have a heightened sensitivity, heightened awareness, where there's some sense of clear seeing, open seeing, awareness, where we're also a little bit free. We're not entangled with what's going on. We're not engaged in it. Just there. And it's quite a remarkable thing to learn to do that with all aspects of one's life. And so one analogy that is that of you've been dropped into the helicopter to pick you up and put you down in the middle of a vast new land, territory you've never been to before. And so first you kind of get to know the territory that's right close by. And then you start going further afield and getting to know more and more of it, more and more of it. And then you start going up the deep, steep hills where it's more difficult to go up or into the difficult, you know, jungle terrain, but you know, you get to learn the whole terrain. Eventually, you learn the whole territory. So, you know, we drop ourselves into the breathing, and we first get to know that. But then, over time, we learn how to get to know the terrain of our body, of our emotions, our cognitive life, until we get to know it all. So, the breathing is very helpful because the breathing for many people is stabilizing, it's settling, it helps kind of interrupt the thinking mind that's taking us away and keeping us spinning, and it kind of interrupts us. I'm hearing a little bit of ringing here. Suddenly, is that a little bit better if I move that? Can you still hear me, or is it still okay? So it interrupts the spinning of the mind, the strong forces of the mind. Every time you come back to the breathing, you're taking a little bit of the strength of thinking away. And slowly the mind quiets down and the strong attachment to think begins to abate. And once the mind is a little more stable and settled, that you have a much better quality awareness to bring to other things. So you bring it to your body, you can feel bodily sensations, and you're not going to spin out so quickly in your thoughts or get distracted. You just stay there and feel it. Being aware of what's going on in your body, having a heightened somatic awareness, is really important in Buddhist practice. You don't always realize that if you read some books on Buddhism, which sometimes seem kind of heady. But if you go spend time in monasteries and places of intense Buddhist practice, a lot of the emphasis on practice is being embodied, being present in your body. I did practice in Zen monasteries, and I can't underscore how much it was emphasized. Just be in your body, be fully present for your experience, what you're doing. And this Vipassana practice that I'm teaching you here has a lot to do with being embodied, being here in your body. So much so that I think we shouldn't call this mindfulness practice, we should call it bodyfulness practice. So much of our life can unfold and deepen when we're connected to our body. The body is not just a lump of flesh. It's us in a very, very significant way. So the way that we kind of explore this territory in this meditation is we start with the breathing and try to develop some stability, some presence, kind of practice with the breath, until some sensation in your body is more compelling than your breathing. And so more compelling, it means that, there's kind of a pull and tug, kind of a little tension between you're trying to stay with the breath and your body, your mind wants to kind of go into that strong sensation, like react, pay attention to it or focus on it or be with it. As soon as something, a strong sensation in your body is more compelling than the breathing, then we let go of the breath, and then in a calm, deliberate way, bring the attention to feel that part of the body where that sensation is. It can be a pleasant sensation, it can be an unpleasant sensation, it doesn't matter. And the idea is to try to feel it in an open, non-commentary way, just to feel it and be present for it. Where we're developing present moment awareness, present moment concentration on that area where that strong sensation is. We're getting to know it, allowing it to be there, not reacting to it, learning how not to react, or learning to put the reactions aside a little bit, so the primary ability focus, just be with it in a simple way. So a little bit of that, I guided you to do, we practiced a little bit in that meditation. What was that like for you? Any comments at all about what it was like to feel the hand, to feel the strongest sensation in your body, to feel your breathing that way? What was that like for you, some of you? Yes, is there a mic over there?
So it's helpful when it's guided, because for me it's like torture sometimes with my head trying to bring it back. Uh-huh. And so by having you guided and it just like helps me just get away from it. Uh-huh. Or a little for some moments. Uh-huh. So when I do it on my own, I'm constantly like, it's like an internal battle almost.
Yes, I can well imagine that. So there's a few things about that. One is that, one thing is to be patient with that. It might be that one of the first things we learn when we meditate like this is how challenging our mind is, what's going on in there. And that's a really good insight. So congratulations. It's really good that you see it. Really take it as a good sign that you've learned to see how your mind is working. Don't feel discouraged. Feel encouraged by that knowledge. And then just be patient. And it might just settle by itself as you see it. The other thing you might try, if it's really challenging what's going on for you, is you might for a while use guided meditations. We have some on our website. There's other places you can get them. And it might help train the mind to learn what it's like not to constantly go out and it's sometimes the very effort to try to bring it back sets up the conditions for it to spin out again. It's kind of like steering up the pond, right? So a guided meditation sometimes can keep you from reacting to it. So you might try that too. Someone else?
So I found it really interesting that we could control our awareness, like throughout our body.
Control where you directed it and put it in different places, uh-huh.
And so,
because you, yeah. And so, In what way do you think that's interesting for you?
I just never really thought of our awareness being like in specific areas uh-huh. throughout our body. It uh-huh. just more was our body, uh-huh. you know?
Yeah. And so as you brought specific attention to particular areas, did it seem to come more alive, or was it become a fuller
yeah.
experience?
And like I was getting more sensation uh-huh. through my hands and mm-hmm. through my feet and uh-huh. stuff.
Yeah. And as we learn to do this more, there's a much greater sense of vitality and aliveness that can become available to us. Much more information than if we're not connected and not seeing clearly. It's a good thing. Great, thank you. Someone else? Yes, is there another mic somewhere over? Where's the other mic? Yeah, can you pass it over there, please? Up on the back of the stage.
At one point, the strongest sensation in my body was my ear was itching. And I lasted like 1.5 breaths experiencing that before I scratched it. And I was just wondering, like, would, I guess, a really experienced meditator be able to just kind of sit and notice that and not do anything about it? Or is that like a goal?
Absolutely. Actually, just Monday when I was teaching here, at the end of the teaching, a man came up to me and said that with great happiness and delight, you know, when I get an itch, it's so great. because he knows he's not going to die. And it just gives it very just lots of juice, lots of things to bring attention to, and lots of to work with patience, to work with not reacting, to work with not getting caught in the commentary. It's safe because he's not going to, you know, no damage is going to be done. So he found it interesting. One of the great meditation practices in Thailand is mosquito meditation, and. And so first you hear the buzz, and so you do a listening meditation, and then you hear it, you know, feel it land on your cheek, and then you feel it walking around, and then you don't feel anything for a while, and you know what that is. And then it goes away, and after a while you feel an itch, and by the time it's all done, you're not thinking about, you know, your high school sweetheart or your taxes or your resentments. You're just like really there. You're fully present. So so itches are common. It's your choice whether you scratch it or not. It's fine to scratch it if you feel too difficult. But it's also nice to know that it's a very interesting laboratory, place to work, to understand yourself, to learn how to develop a stronger mindfulness, to learn how you to be stronger. How can you be stronger than the urge to itch? How can you become stronger than the itch? And so just be present. Or something like it. So safe. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, if your knee is burning, you know, maybe you're twisting it too much in meditation, right? And you should do something about it. But to itch generally is safe. So so it's up to you. Make sense? Yes.
One benefit is that, like, if you're meditating on the breath, I mean, if there is some other sensation in the body that, you know, becomes compelling, as you said, I mean, you can basically, I mean, if it's discomforting or comforting or whatever, you can basically turn that into a point of attention. Right?
Exactly. Perfect. Yeah, so whatever is happening in your body, whether it's comfortable or uncomfortable, it becomes the point of meditation. So rather than it becoming a distraction, rather than having your body being a distraction, oh no, my body's so painful, I can't stay with my breath, or, you know, or I'm, you know, whatever you're feeling in your body, nothing in your body needs to be a distraction. It's just something else to pay attention to.
About the itch, I was just wondering, it just seemed kind of odd when you got an itch, like almost for no reason. I was wondering, is it possible, like, it's an emotional thing, or is it, Is something actually happening on your skin, or could it be emotional? I don't know.
It could be. You know, it could be
like
all kinds of things.
Nervous habit or something.
Yeah, it could be all kinds of things. It could be, you know, many theories, many things could be happening. Sometimes the awareness that we have travels around by itself, and it can travel into certain parts of the body and kind of have a heightened awareness. And in that heightened awareness, we just become, you know, aware of things we aren't normally aware of. So it could be an itch, or it could be a warmth, or it could be all kinds of things, coldness or hardness or things. So just somehow your attention landed there. It could be that there's something going on physiologically there that maybe is causing an itch, maybe with dry skin or something. Sometimes there's certain kind of itches that come in meditation when people are pretty good at meditation and can get really concentrated. There's certain kinds of itching that comes from concentration that makes it feels like there's insects crawling across your body. I've sat and meditated in Thailand, and I said, I have to look because I think the ants are all crawling across my legs. And so I open my eyes and look, and there's no ants at all. And who knows what it is. What's best, unless the house is burning down or something, what's best to do in meditation, what's most useful for the purpose of meditation is not to understand why, but to use it as one other avenue for developing awareness. Okay, I'm going to really be present, learn how to be present in a simple, open way, not reacting, not judging, just be here with that. Yes. The person right in front of you there. Yeah.
So in past meditations, when I focus on my breath, I've always kept it just in the nasal cavity.
Yeah.
Not consciously, just have. And today when I was meditating, I think it was the first time I ever realized, I've always known that there's air going into my lungs, uh-huh, and that, there's a gas inside of me. But this is the first time I actually noticed it and felt it, I think, in my life.
Great.
And it just made me so happy.
Nice.
I was just like, oh, I could feel like a balloon inside of me, compressing and decompressing. Nice. And so it was just like this joy.
Mm. Yeah, nice. Yeah. Very nice. And so that speaks a little bit to the... What?
I think you said serotonin.
Serotonin, sure. I'll take that. What you're touching on is that there can be a lot of joy that arises in meditation when we've learned how to be present for the fullness of the experience, with breath or whatever, even pain sometimes, and fullness in a very simple, relaxed, open awareness, just being fully there for it. Something about the aliveness and the presence and the focus of it that really, maybe it releases serotonin, but it's a very nice experience. And it's something that meditators begin experiencing more and more with as they start getting concentrated. And it's also something that transfers into daily life, where the natural vitality of life, the kind of being embodied, being present and alive, can feel wonderful, independent of what's happening to us. Many times our happiness is dependent on what's going on. Who we're with, what success we have, or what pleasures we're getting, what successes we're getting, what entertainment we're getting, all kinds of things. And so some people are always searching for the next thing that's going to make them happy, or make the thing that's going to do it for them. But to discover how nothing needs to happen except to relax and feel breathing, the body present, opens up doors of happiness that are really wonderful. And it also begins to loosen up the drive that our happiness has to be in getting things. There's a whole other game in town, which doesn't require a better experience outside of us, better friends, better bank accounts, better houses, better cars, better recreational opportunities, all kinds of things. So that's great that you had that. Great. Okay, so the idea is to sit with, meditate with the breathing until something in your body is more compelling. And that can be pleasant or unpleasant. And when that happens, anywhere in the body, the idea is to calmly and deliberately let go of your breathing and turn your attention or not just turn your attention, bring your attention into that part of your body so you can feel it fully, like we did for the hand. Just okay. And so part of that involves being... We have cough drops in the cabinet in the kitchen. Okay. So where I leave off. So something compelling your body, and you bring your attention to it. In order to feel it like we felt the hand, just which means giving permission to be there, being curious, curious in it, just interested. What is this experience? Feel it, be with it, get to know it, and then as you do that, you'll get to know yourself better. You'll get to know your commentary. You get to know your reactions to it. How you're for it, against it, how you have judgments about it, your impatience, your attachment to it. This is great. I love it. Whatever's going on. And all those things are kind of like commentary. They might be fine, but they're not the experience itself. And we're trying to just be very simple and just stay with the experience itself. Feel it for what it is. So rather than the body being a distraction, the body becomes the meditation. If the sensation is no longer compelling, then you can come back to your breathing. If the sensation is... goes away, but another sensation becomes compelling, then you go to that sensation. If you're staying with one compelling sensation and then another sensation becomes even more compelling, just go over there quietly, calmly, and feel that. Whatever's going on in the body. And if nothing is particularly compelling in the body, just stay with the breathing. Be with the breathing. And that way, the body is not a distraction for meditation, it becomes the meditation. It also begins a wonderful process of awakening attention in the body, heightened sensitivity, which we can hopefully bring into our daily life as well. And so we're training ourselves to be in touch with what goes on in our body, the information that's there, the tension, the warmth, all the different sensations that come into play as we touch the environment or in the world. And there's a tremendous amount of information that goes on through the body which teaches us and tells us what's happening in us, how we should be in the world, what's wise, and all that. I've because I'm doing this for so long, generally, on a good day, I can be very sensitive to the slightest little movement of tension in my belly, in my chest, in my shoulders, in different places. And I can pick up some of my reactions, responses, attachments, fears, anxieties very early, because of recognizing, seeing it through my body. And so the body's like the doorway into a deeper understanding to what's happening here. It's a great thing. Some people find it helpful to use what's called a note, a mental label. So if you feel an itch, to just go and say, itching, itching. If you feel warmth, warmth, warmth. If you feel tugging in your knee, tugging, tugging. Stabbing someplace, stabbing, stabbing. And the art of this mental note is two things, a variety of things, but one is it gives the thinking mind something to do, so you're less likely to wander off into thinking. Because if you don't give the thinking mind, an idle mind will get in trouble. So it gives you a little thing to do. And the other thing it does, it's a little cheerleader or nudge, stay right there, stay right there. So if I'm feeling an itch, I'll just say very quietly, softly, gently in the mind, itch, itch. And it's a way of saying, stay right there, stay with it, stay with it. So whatever it might be you're feeling, stay with it, stay with it, be with it. It can be, and that includes pain. If the strong sensation is pain, the first approach of mindfulness is to bring our attention to it and just feel it and be with it. A friend of mine many years ago was teaching mindfulness-based stress reduction class, and there was a really tough, I think he was an ex-police officer, really tough kind of stoic man who had severe back pain, been injured. And coming to this class was like the last resort for him. He'd been through his doctors and everything, and nothing seemed to help his back pain. And so he came to this class, and so when they came to giving instructions for mindfulness of the body, my friend told the class, and now bring your attention and feel the strongest sensation, feel the pain. And the guy got really angry. I'm not here to feel my pain, I'm here to get rid of it, to stop it. And you're making it worse. And what he had to learn is that to feel the pain, but not to add anything more to it. And I learned this when I was in the Zen monasteries. It's different from our practice here, where it's fine to move if you're in pain. In Zen, if you're meditating, you're not allowed to move. So it's in Zen, they overdo it sometimes. And there are people who get damaged by that approach. And I know people who've damaged their knees. But I did that training. And there were times when my knees were intensely on fire, very painful. I don't recommend it. But it was actually very useful for me, because what happened was that it was so intense and so difficult that I had to watch my mind very carefully. And as soon as I had self-pity, it would get worse. Because as soon as I had self-pity, the little muscles around my knee would tighten up around the pain. I'd feel more pain. And if I didn't have the self-pity, then that extra little tightening wouldn't happen, and there'd be a little less pain, just enough to manage. And I've done the same thing with headaches. When I felt tremendous self-pity, a poor Gil, it's so hard, I'm not feeling good. It's just like so debilitating. But if I bring mindfulness to the headache and really kind of interested, be present for it, just be right there, I'm less likely to spin off into my self-pity, into my reaction, my aversion to it. It's just pain. And when it's simply just pain, then and not all the secondary layers I put on top of it, I find it a lot easier. So it's a great training. So it's a training to learn how to be with these things. As a training, it's something that takes time. You can't do it suddenly, quickly, overnight. So don't be discouraged by how it is for you. But if you keep it up, keep bringing your attention, using the meditation, slowly over time, you'll learn a really, really useful skill and ability to be present for your life in all kinds of ways. That is very, very helpful, and without having to react, change, attack, fix, justify, just to be present. Does that make some sense? Yes, please. Then if you can use the mic.
Can meditation help with ridding tinnitus?
Tinnitus? You mean the ringing in the ears?
Yes.
People ask that kind of question about all kinds of conditions. And in terms of what we're trying to teach here, the best answer is no. Not with it, the condition in and of itself, but you can learn to be at ease with it. You can learn to be untroubled with it. And that can make all the difference in the world. So there are some things which won't go away, you can't promise. Some things do heal and get better with meditation for sure. That's some conditions we have. But some things, maybe they don't go away, but we learn how to be at a profound peace with it and ease with it, so it's no longer a hindrance in our life. And I have tinnitus as well. And there are times when I was really troubled by it. But now it's, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry. I wanted to say that I, during the last week, I found very helpful what you said last week about how in meditation, every second there's a new possibility to start.
Yes.
So for me, it was very I don't know if liberating is the word, but, you know, when my mind is wandering and I think that I, you know, I'm wasting my time during meditation, it helps to think that, you know, I'll get another chance.
Great.
And I also think that, you know, it's very forgiving and kind to start. Be, you know, in that kind of practice that gives you a chance every second.
To start over.
Yeah, that's to start over.
Wonderfully said. So very forgiving and kind, a practice that you get to start all over again. So you don't have to bring along with you into the next moment the commentary, I just blew it. You just start over again. Leave the commentary behind. Good. So one more, and then I have some more I want to say. So the gentleman in the back there.
I want to share an experience with the pain thing. Over the last week, I had a bruise, and I would feel like a lot of pain. The moment I become like kind of mindful and, you know, feel the pain. I mean, feel the bruise the way it is. I experienced like a relative decrease,
decrease
in the pain itself.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. How many of you, when you had directed your attention to a strong sensation that maybe was uncomfortable or painful, and you brought your attention to it, it decreased? How many did it increase? How many of it stayed the same? Great. Those are the three options. And your job is just to be present for the option, present for how it is. If it decreases, just be present for that. If it increases, be present for that. And practice with that. So there are many things in our physical world which we want to learn to be present for rather than seeing it as a problem. And one of them, you know, so the body is one of them for sure. The other big one is sounds. So if you're sitting meditating in the morning at home and your neighbor's dog through the thin walls of your apartment building is barking, suddenly starts to bark. One possibility, one reaction could be that dog is interrupting my meditation. It's making my meditation difficult. Or even more dramatic, my neighbor is making it difficult. My neighbor, you know, is responsible. And you can get self-righteous. And don't they realize how important my meditation is for me? And they're getting in the way. And I need to talk to the landlord. Another option, which is more the mindfulness approach, it's just something else to pay attention to. The barking dog is the compelling experience of the moment, and let go of the breath and turn your attention calmly and deliberately to just hear the barking. And then you do a listening meditation and just allow the listening to be there and try to kind of separate out the commentary and reactions so they doesn't get in the way. Just hear the barking. My meditation teacher in Burma, one of the great teachers, he's still alive, one of the great teachers of the 20th century, his entryway into deeper meditation states was, he was a very gung-ho, he's kind of like a drill sergeant kind of guy, you know, very energetic, strong, tough, like a bulldog, you know, he's going to do something, he's going to do it. And so he was in the monastery to learn to meditate. And he had a roommate in his room. So when he got time to go to bed, he would sit up he was diligent. He would sit up to meditate into the evening, into the night. But his roommate, he had a judgment, or was lazy, and would go to bed. And worse than that, his roommate snored. So for the first number of nights, he was indignant, upset, reactive. Thought, this, my roommate's bothering my meditation. You know, I can't meditate. This is terrible. And then at some point, what he did was he stopped all the judgments, and he turned his attention to the snoring and made the snoring the object of his attention, object of mindfulness. And when he did that, then his mind settled down, he got focused, and he started to have a very useful present moment awareness that opened the doors for deeper practice for himself. Snoring, isn't that great?
Leverage the problem.
Yeah, use the problems, right. Good. So I thought we would end very briefly with a little exercise of mindfulness of sounds, of listening, to give you a sense how this can also be an important part of how all this works. So take a meditation posture. And we're not going to do this for very long. And gently close your eyes. And take a couple of deep breaths and settle in. And then bring your attention to the middle of your head, between your ears, behind your forehead, and feel whatever is there. Maybe subtle pressure, tension, vibration, or maybe nothing. But just hold your attention there. Just feel whatever is there or is not there for a few moments. And then as you exhale, see if you can relax that part of your brain. Relax your thinking muscle. And then allow your ears to receive the sounds around you. There's no wrong sounds, just sounds, sounds of my voice, traffic, if your mind wanders off, thought, start again, being hearing sound. One of the nice things about open awareness to sound is you don't know what the next sound's going to be. It can come from any direction, any way. So just stay open and let it come. You can't control it, but you can allow it to sounds to come to you. I'll ring the bell 3 times, not to end the meditation, but to give you something to listen to. Let yourself really hear the sound of the bell. Noticing any commentary you might have about what's happening. And if you notice the commentary, see if you can be put it aside to be really simple. Relaxed, open. For another minute or so, to whatever sounds there are, subtle or gross, big, small. then letting go of sounds. And come back and experience your breathing for 3 or 4 breaths. And then take a couple of deep breaths to end this sitting, feeling your body, feeling the chair and the floor, the cushion. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So there are some people, so I said earlier that one of the primary home bases for meditation is breathing. And it's often just good to come back to your breath. If you wander off, just start again the breath. It's often a good strategy. And some people make the breath really their primary object of meditation. And it's a long tradition of that in Buddhism. There are some people for whom the breath doesn't work as a primary meditation object for a variety of reasons. And if that's the case, and you give it, you know, you make an effort. Don't decide that too quickly, because if we decided it quickly, the breath doesn't work for us. It wouldn't work for any of us. Everyone's going to be new meditators are going to be find it a little challenging. But this listening meditation is offered as an alternative to the breath, and that can be the home base, the home practice. You just do listening. If you hear a sound, you're in the present moment. Sounds are always present moment experience. It helps you, it trains you to be in the present. Some people find it much more relaxing. Some people who are a little bit too caught up in controlling their breath, because you can't, they find it's easier to be with sounds because you can't control them. So it is an option you have. And then all the other instructions follow. So if the sound is a primary home base, and then there's a strong sensation in your body, then you let go of the sound and come to the body. How I've been teaching it today is you start with the breath, come back to the breath, whenever you can be with your breathing. But if a sensation in your body is compelling, or if there's a sound that's compelling, those become the meditation. Rather than being a distraction, they become the meditation. And one of the things you'll learn as you learn about this, the full instructions of this practice, in this practice, this particular form of meditation, there are no such thing as distractions. Isn't that nice? It's just something else to notice, just something else to bring your attention to. Next week, I'll talk about mindfulness of emotions, a very big part of some people's lives, very useful to bring attention to it. The more skilled, the more able you are to bring attention to your body and practice mindfulness of the body, the easier it is to practice mindfulness of emotions. And that's one of the reasons we follow the sequence in this course. And so for those of you who are going to meditate this week or practice in your daily life, I encourage you to make attention to your body a primary focus. Just whenever you can, just check into your body. What's happening in your body? Recognize it. Develop a habit of being in your body, feeling what's there, discovering what's there. There is this homework or this sheet that you can pick up if you want. And a PDF of it is on that Audio Dharma website that has the recordings. But in there, there's also some exercises you can do around mindfulness of the body in your daily life that you might find interesting. There's a few people here who are able to answer questions or talk to you about your practice if you'd like. So there's Evan Wong, who's up there. Why don't you stand up? All of you stand so people can see you. So there's Evan, and there's Bruni sitting there, and Kate, who's behind Bruni, and there's Oren, who's standing there, and there's Hillary, who's here at the soundboard, who's not standing. And I think these are all people in some kind of training or other who had lots of experience, and You're welcome to talk to them, ask them questions, and or you can come to me as well. I'll sit up here for a while. Thank you all.